Hello and welcome to this week's reading of The Week magazine, the best of U.S. and international media, all you need to know about everything that matters. I'm reading from the March 29th issue. First, we turn to The World at a Glance. From Hong Kong, takeover complete. Hong Kong's legislature passed a Beijing-backed national security bill this week that could crush what civil liberties remain in the formerly autonomous city. Article 23 is the local version of the draconian law that Beijing imposed in 2020. It imposes harsh punishments for treason, sabotage, foreign interference, and espionage, and defines those crimes vaguely enough to sweepingly apply them to eliminate political threats. The definition of state secrets is now so broad, encompassing any information about Hong Kong's or China's economy and technology, that many investors, business executives, and finance sector workers fear their work could be labeled criminal. Authorities' first attempt at such a bill in 2003 prompted massive protests. But since then, Beijing has slowly chipped away at the freedom to assemble and packed the legislature with Beijing loyalists. Moving to Niamey, Niger, junta cuts ties with the U.S. Niger's military leaders said this week they want American troops to leave the country, days after a high-level U.S. delegation visited for talks. Niger was a major ally in the West's fight against jihadism until a coup overthrew its government last July, and the U.S. still has about 1,000 soldiers and a base there to monitor al-Qaeda and ISIS activity. Senior officials from the Pentagon and State Department had traveled to Niamey in hopes of persuading the junta to continue that cooperation, but junta spokesman Amadou Abdourahmane said the Americans had been quote-unquote condescending. He said the U.S. objected to the new regime's chosen allies, a likely reference to Iran and Russia. The junta cited similar reasons for kicking out French troops in December. From Cardiff, United Kingdom, Europe's first black leader. Vaughan Gething was confirmed as First Minister of Wales this week, making him the first black head of government in Europe. Gething, a Cardiff-educated lawyer with a Zambian mother and Welsh father, got the post by narrowly winning the Labour Party leadership last week. Previous leader, Mark Drakeford, stepped down after serving 5 years he'd pledged when he took office. Three of the UK's four governments now have non-white leaders. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's heritage is Indian. Scottish First Minister Humza Yousaf's is Pakistani. Today, we turn the page in the book of our nation's history, Gething said, a history that we write together. Wales is less than 1% black. From Santiago, Cuba, rare protest. Hundreds of people demonstrated in Cuba's second largest city this week over prolonged power outages and food shortages. Videos on social media show Santiago residents, many of them women carrying children, gathered outside a government building chanting, "We are hungry." The communist country is facing its worst economic crisis in 3 decades, with soaring prices, 30% inflation, and daily blackouts. Unable to provide bread and milk, government recently asked the World Food Program, which usually provides emergency rations after war or disaster, for help. Public dissent is unusual in Cuba, where unauthorized gatherings are banned. At least 3 protesters were arrested, triggering more protests for their release. Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel said his government was prepared to, quote, attend to the complaints of our people, listen, dialogue, end quote. From Tegucigalpa, Honduras, dynastic hopes. The wife of Honduras's jailed ex-president said she'll run in next year's presidential election. Ana Garcia de Hernandez, U.S.-educated lawyer, said being first lady had prepared her for the presidency. "I know what has to be done," I know the job, she said. Her husband, Juan Orlando Hernandez, who as president from 2014 to 2022 was considered Washington's ally in the war on drugs, was arrested shortly after leaving office, convicted in U.S. federal court earlier this month of conspiring with cocaine traffickers. He faces life in prison. His wife said her presidential bid is intended to show the world the injustice that was done to her innocent husband, not an attempt to protect herself from prosecution, as her detractors allege. Moving to Port-au-Prince, Haiti, vital supplies looted. Haiti's humanitarian crisis deepened this week as aid agencies reported their supplies were being looted. Weeks-long gang insurgency led by Jimmy Barbecue Cherizé has turned the capital into a battlefield, overrunning the main airport and the main port. UNICEF said one of its containers at the port, full of infant resuscitators and other maternity supplies, was stolen while power stations were looted of equipment and batteries, causing blackouts across the city. With gangs blocking most food distribution, some 1.4 million people are at risk of famine. Marie Lourdes Genius took shelter in a school, says her seven children now eat only once a day. There are a lot of desperate people who look like me, she said, who had a life and lost it. From Brasilia, Bolsonaro indicted. Former Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro was charged this week with faking his COVID-19 immunization. Bolsonaro, a far-right populist in office from 2019 to 2022, is an anti-vaxxer who initially refused to purchase any COVID vaccines for his country. Prosecutors say that between late 2021 and early 2022, after losing his re-election bid to leftist Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, Bolsonaro altered a public health database to make it appear that he, his daughter, and several associates had received the COVID shot. They needed proof of vaccination to enter the United States, where Bolsonaro spent the first few months of Lula's term. This is Bolsonaro's first indictment, but he faces a raft of criminal charges for allegedly accepting gifts while in office and plotting to overthrow Lula's government when thousands of his supporters stormed the Brazilian capital on January 8th, 2022. Next, we'll move to sample editorials. First from that section, the furor over Trump's quote-unquote bloodbath warning. What happened? Donald Trump and his allies pushed back this week against an uproar over his claim that, if he's not reelected, there's, quote, going to be a bloodbath for the country, end quote. At a campaign appearance in Ohio, Trump opened with tributes to MAGA supporters jailed for their role in the January 6th insurrection, calling them unbelievable patriots and hostages. He called migrants entering the U.S. criminals and quote-unquote animals, who are not people, in my opinion. But the biggest reaction came in response to the bloodbath comment, which accompanied Trump's vow to put 100% tariff on Chinese-made electric cars. Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole, that's going to be the least of it, it's going to be a bloodbath for the country. Biden campaign accused Trump of doubling down on threats of political violence and began airing an ad featuring a comment along with violent images of Trump supporters attacking the U.S. Capitol. But Trump and his campaign insisted he'd been talking about an economic bloodbath in the auto industry. Trump's former vice president, Mike Pence, went on Fox News to announce he couldn't, quote, in good conscience, end quote, endorse Trump. On January 6th, Trump supporters called for Pence's death by hanging as they stormed the Capitol, and Trump reportedly told aides Pence, quote-unquote, deserved that fate for refusing to block certification of Joe Biden's electoral win. Pence cited January 6th as a reason for his decision, but also emphasized profound policy differences with Trump, whose positions are at odds with the conservative agenda. What the columnist said. Bloodbath Gate is a farce, said Jeffrey Blahar and National Review. It's clear that Trump, playing to a working-class crowd in the Rust Belt, was amping up fears of economic doom. But the hyperventilating press turned his loose-tongue bloviation into a call for nationwide massacres. Every time the Trump-hating press overreacts, said Jonathan Goldberg in the Dispatch, it enables Trump and his allies to dismiss legitimate warnings about his extremism as fake news, cast Trump as a quote-unquote martyr. Trump can be artful in how he couches incitement, said Norman Eisen and Ruth Ben-Ghiat in MSNBC.com. He instinctively knows how to create a sense of existential fear in his audience and get people to overcome taboos about committing violence. It's what Trump did on January 6 when he told his followers, if you don't fight like hell, you won't have a country anymore. Let's look at the real context of the quote-unquote bloodbath warning, said Timothy Snyder in Substack newsletter. Trump's rally started with a brazen celebration of the convicted criminals who beat cops, used an actual bloodbath to try to reverse the election results. Trump's pledge to pardon them was a clear signal that if he regains power, he'll protect anyone who commits violence on his behalf. His opponent, Trump said, is allied with subhuman animals, quote-unquote, who will destroy America. History tells us this is all straight from the fascist playbook. Those who ignore Trump's core message are the ones taking Trump's remarks out of context. In fact, Trump is making his defense of the January 6th insurrection a cornerstone of his bid to return to the White House, said Lisa Mascaro in Associated Press. His rallies now often begin with a recording of January 6th prisoners singing the national anthem as Trump and his followers stand and salute. Meanwhile, he's calling for jailing former Representative Liz Cheney and other House committee members who investigated January 6th and has installed a host of election deniers on the Republican National Committee. Trump is very clearly telling us he intends to end the rule of law and become an autocrat. Another item from sample editorials. Putin extends his one-man rule for another term. What happened? Russian President Vladimir Putin claimed victory this week in a predetermined election that will grant the country's longest-serving leader since Stalin another 6 years in power. The election board said he took 87% of the vote. Outside observers, though, estimated that millions of voters that have been faked. Moscow-based election monitor Golos recorded more than 1,400 instances of ballot stuffing and other violations. Putin's name appeared on the ballot alongside three others, all relative unknowns, handpicked by the Kremlin. Few true opposition candidates were barred from running, and Alexei Navalny, Putin's most powerful foe, died in a Siberian prison last month. Still, thousands of people went to the polls to vote against Putin in a noontime flash protest. In power either as prime minister or president since 1999, Putin changed the constitution so he can run again after his new term expires in 2030. Chinese President Xi Jinping formed a no-limits partnership with Putin in 2022, called the election results, quote, a full demonstration of the support of the Russian people, end quote. While Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi said he looked forward to strengthening Delhi's special and privileged partnership with Moscow. In a break with tradition, many Western nations, including the United States, did not extend congratulations to Putin, instead calling the vote a mockery of the democratic process. There was nothing free or fair about this election, the White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said. What the columnist said, there was no election, said Anne Applebaum at The Atlantic, but an elaborate piece of political theater. Authorities claimed turnout was 77%, but That dubious figure was inflated by polling station raffle prizes and employer requirements that workers vote. Russians are not enthusiastic about a regime that has sent hundreds of thousands of men to the meat grinder that is the Ukraine war, and that persecutes people for laying flowers on Navalny's grave. Yet as a raw display of power, the re-election charade was a decided success, said Brian Michael Jenkins in The Hill. In his 24 years in office, Putin has accumulated more authority than any Soviet leader, save perhaps Stalin. He has labeled civil society groups, foreign agents, outlawed protest, arrested hundreds of political prisoners. Now he is reorganizing the country for perpetual warfare against the West, while the ties he has forged with India and China allow the Russian economy to resist the pinch of sanctions. Another segment from The Week magazine, Best Columns. From the Netherlands, how the extremist Wilders was sidelined. The far-right firebrand who won the Dutch elections will not be the next prime minister, said Helene Schaart in politico.eu from Belgium. Geert Wilders, populist known as much for his peroxide blonde bouffant as for his anti-immigrant rants, seemed poised to take power after his Party for Freedom, PVV, won a quote-unquote shock plurality in November's parliamentary elections. But mainstream Dutch parties kept stymieing his efforts to form a governing coalition. Negotiators finally concluded that the biggest obstacle to a coalition deal was the prospect of Wilders himself becoming prime minister. Lawmaker since 1998, Wilders is the Dutch parliament's longest-serving member, but his bigoted screeds he has called Islam totalitarian and Moroccans scum make him a pariah. Now he's bowed out of the leadership contest, gambling that by giving up personal ambition, he will help ensure his hardline right-wing political vision becomes a reality. It's still a victory of sorts. A deal is in the offing for the PVV, long considered radioactive for its extremism, to helm an alliance of four right and center-right parties. Wilders, once fringe party, has entered the mainstream. Europe can breathe a sigh of relief, said Thomas Kirchner in Süddeutsche Zeitung from Germany. If Wilders had become Dutch prime minister, he'd have a seat in the European Council in Brussels, where he could spew his Islamophobia and his toxic nationalism on a wider stage. This is a man who campaigned to withdraw the Netherlands from the European Union in a so-called Nexit, reject all new asylum claims, and outlaw mosques and the Koran. Basically, he ran against everything European cooperation stands for. Fortunately, most of Wilders' craziness threats, repeat in stormy rapture on the campaign trail, are now dissolving, said Jarl van de Ploeg in De Volkskrant in the Netherlands, as the few moderates in his party are being forced to horse trade to secure their spot in the coalition. Koran ban? You can put it on ice. Aid to Ukraine? Still flowing. Nexit? No, no, no. Still, one pledge is too important to abandon, a draconian crackdown on migrants. When the PVV won last year, some Dutch pundits tried to spin the results not as evidence that the Dutch are racist, but as a protest vote against high gas prices. Yet Wilders knows his own voters well, and they want what he wants, a country with far fewer foreigners. The best column from Colombia, the Latin nostalgia for a Soviet ally. Luis Eduardo Gutierrez, El Espectador. Why won't Latin America help Ukraine repel Russian invaders? Asked Luis Eduardo Gutierrez. While Western governments are busy shipping weapons to Kyiv, Latin America's leftist leaders have stayed out of it, refusing to offer even verbal support for the Ukrainian cause. The reason may lie in this region's residual gratitude for Soviet backing of leftist movements here during the Cold War. Russia is the symbolic heir of the great power that supported the communists and guerrillas, while the U.S. is still condemned for having sided with right-wing dictators and their death squads. Keen to prolong the Soviet influence in the countries of the global south, Russia has flooded the region with propaganda. Russian outlets RT and Sputnik are both carried on Venezuelan broadcaster Telesur, reaching billions of viewers across Latin America with messages promoting Russia as an iconoclastic force for a multipolar new world order. So while it's not fair to say that Latin America leaders are full-throated support Russian invasion of Ukraine, it is true that they have not been able to choose between their rejection of the United States and their rejection of the use of violence. Instead, they have opted for silence. In a best column from Ireland, "No Unifying Vision Replaces Catholicism" by Fintan O'Toole, The Irish Times. There is a Catholic church-shaped hole in Ireland's political imagination, said Fintan O'Toole, when the government called for a referendum to strike antiquated language from our 1937 constitution, saying a woman's place is in the home and linking family to marriage. It's believed the change would be an easy sell, so easy that it didn't bother to test market the more modern yet vague and bureaucratic verbiage. When voters rejected the proposal last week, it was a humiliating defeat, but entirely predictable. Referendum flopped, not because the Irish are backwards or sexist, but because the government misunderstood something very big about Ireland today. Catholicism, with its desire to control women's bodies and choices, used to underpin Irish identity, permeating the home, the school, the workplace, the government. We now know how cold and dark that holy house was for those who were confined to its cellars. Yet you can't raise an edifice without building a new one to take its place, and the government's new language lacked any nod to the values the Irish still treasure: fairness, equality, mutual support. Government tried to replace a potent 1930s vision with a piecemeal, wishy-washy 2020s gesture. We'll purge the constitution of sexism one day. We just need a vision with some poetry in it to stir the Irish soul. In a best column from the U.S., "The Terrible Cost of Isolationism" by Hal Brands from Bloomberg. Our world resembles the 1930s more than we might think, said Hal Brands. As in the run-up to World War II, belligerent authoritarian states are seeking expansive empires and forming alliances, while a major America First political faction in the U.S. is preaching isolationism. Russia and China are not fully equivalent to Hitler's Germany and Imperial Japan, but as that era demonstrated, the international order can collapse with devastating thoroughness and speed. China is conducting a massive military buildup in pursuit of its goal of absorbing Taiwan and dominating East Asia. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has escalated into a broad, dangerous conflict with NATO and the West. The goal of U.S. policy should be to prevent major war, and deterrence will require a much greater capacity to produce artillery shells, other weapons and air defense systems to be shared with Ukraine and Taiwan. Also need to build more long-range missiles, ships, and submarines to keep the upper hand in a great power war. In 1940, the cost of failing to stop the fascist powers early was ghastly, including 60 million dead. Containing and deterring Russia and China will not be easy or cheap, but the alternative could be much worse. Next, we'll move to the health and science section. Creating RNA life in a lab. The prevailing theory of the origin of life on Earth holds that about 4 billion years ago, a molecule called RNA took a crucial step. It generated a copy of itself. This copy made another copy, which over millions of years led to the creation of DNA and proteins, all leading eventually to the first cell. Now, in a landmark experiment, scientists have created an RNA molecule in the laboratory that was able to generate accurate copies of another type of RNA. This brings the researchers one step closer to their ultimate goal of creating an RNA molecule that can make accurate copies of itself. Then it would be alive, study co-author Gerald Joyce from the Salk Institute of Biological Studies in La Jolla, California, tells the Washington Post. So this is the road to how life can arise in a laboratory or, in principle, anywhere in the universe. RNA replication is a tight balance. Copies have to be extremely similar to the original, but cannot be 100% perfect because that would prohibit the RNA from evolving. New experiment has been a long time in the works. The team at the Salk Institute spent close to 10 years raising dozens of generations of RNA molecules. Over time, these generations got better at copying the other molecules, providing further evidence for the so-called RNA world theory. Also from the health and science section, drop acid to treat anxiety. As LSD formulation has given breakthrough therapy status by the Food and Drug Administration, reports CNN.com, after clinical trials suggest that it can alleviate anxiety. A potent hallucinogen developed in a lab in 1938, LSD is banned, Schedule I controlled substance, but the new double-blind trial found that a single dose of the LSD formulation MM120 resulted in a 48% remission rate for generalized anxiety disorder after 12 weeks, an improvement in 65% of the patients over the same period. Unlike the most recent research into MDMA, also known as ecstasy, and psilocybin, the active ingredient in magic mushrooms, the MM120 trial didn't involve therapists actively guiding the patients through the trip. Monitors did sit by in case of adverse effects, but no bad trips were reported, possibly because the pharmacological-grade drug was so pure. The clinical improvement for many patients was more than double what we see with today's standard of care, said Daniel Carlin, chief medical officer for the drug's developer, MindMed. This occurred at all levels of anxiety, from moderate all the way up to severe. Generalized anxiety disorder, characterized by excessive distressing thoughts and catastrophizing, is one of the most common mental disorders in the U.S., affecting nearly 7 million adults every year. Hottest oceans ever. Ocean temperatures soared to their highest level in recorded history in February, reports the New York Times. Figures released by the EU showed that oceans hit an average daily high of 21.09 degrees Celsius, while the average for the month was 21.06 degrees, both higher than the previous record set in August last year. When land and sea surface temperatures were combined, it was the hottest February ever recorded, the ninth month in a row to break its monthly record, at 1.77 degrees higher than pre-industrial levels. Warmer waters can have catastrophic effects on marine wildlife, starving fish of oxygen, increasing the risk of harmful algal blooms. One factor driving the higher ocean temperatures was the El Niño weather system, which is expected to weaken later this year, potentially be replaced by a cooler La Niña. But given that most years' highest temperatures come in August, it's still possible that further records will be broken before then. The temperature's just going off the charts, said Matthew England, professor at Australia's University of New South Wales, who studies ocean currents. It's like an omen of the future. Finally, from the health and science section, redwoods in the United Kingdom. There are now more giant redwoods in the forest of Britain than in the species native California, a new study shows. First brought to the UK about 160 years ago by Victorians who wanted exotic trees for their grand estates, British redwoods now number 500,000. California, by contrast, has just 80,000 mature redwood trees. So far, the UK transplants aren't nearly as big, reaching just 180 feet at the tallest, compared with nearly 300 feet for those in California. But scientists say that's only because they haven't had as long to grow. Sequoia dendron giganteum can live for nearly 2,000 years. That the transplanted trees are thriving in the UK's damp climate, growing about as fast as those in the Sierra Nevada. Where they grow in California, it's cooler and moister than you would typically envision California to be, study co-author Phil Wilkes told BBC.com, and we have a reasonably similar climate here. It's very wet. They need the moisture to grow. Researchers say that because redwoods in California are increasingly threatened by drought and wildfire, the species may actually end up faring better in its new home. Next from The Week magazine, we have the business segment. Big tech. Apple could turn to Google for AI. The ties between Apple and Google could get stronger soon, said Mark Gurman in Bloomberg. The iPhone maker was said to be in talks this week to build Google's Gemini artificial intelligence engine onto its phones. The deal would give Gemini a key edge in its race for users with OpenAI, which beat Google to the market with its generative AI program, ChatGPT, and has partnered with Microsoft. Apple has also been seeking a partner to do the heavy lifting as its own AI efforts stall, but any Apple-Google linkage will come under scrutiny. Already, an antitrust lawsuit is underway focusing on the contract that keeps Google Search as the default option on iPhones. The deal would solve problems for both companies, said Anita Ramaswamy in Reuters. Google has reason to worry that users will begin flocking to intelligent chatbots like OpenAI's ChatGPT in lieu of using Google Search. Apple, meanwhile, has enormously valuable contact points with users, but it has no AI service to keep them hooked on buying new iPhones. Apple has also had talks with OpenAI, but it holds an advantage in negotiating with Alphabet because Google has something to lose. The downside is that such a close relationship between the two giants may make regulatory watchdogs feel they have little choice but to intervene. Housing. Realtors' settlement could cut commissions. The National Association of Realtors agreed to end antitrust lawsuits by paying $418 million in damages and changing its long-standing rules on commissions, said David Goldman and Anna Blaney in CNN.com. The NAR was found guilty in a federal court last year of, quote, conspiring to keep agent commissions artificially high, end quote. Americans typically paid a 6% commission split between the seller's agent and the buyer's agent. Because the NAR required that sellers include the compensation for agents when placing a listing on its database. The end of that requirement means sellers could save between $6,000 and $12,000 on an average price home. Launches. SpaceX Starship rocket reaches space. SpaceX successfully launched its powerful Starship rocket into space, said Morgan McFall Johnson in Business Insider. The mega rocket, 400 feet long, capable of carrying 165 tons into orbit, finally thundered past the stratosphere on the company's third attempt. Last week's launch wasn't completely triumphant, though. During its red-hot plummet back to Earth, Starship dropped out of communication. SpaceX later said the rocket had been lost. Starship and its booster, Super Heavy, are designed to be the world's first fully reusable launch system, but that technological milestone will have to wait. Some items from the bottom line column in the business section. Global dividend payouts to shareholders hit a record $1.66 trillion in 2023, according to a new report by British asset manager Janus Henderson. Around 86% of listed companies globally either increased dividends or maintained them at current levels in 2023. This from CNBC.com. Chipotle's shares briefly climbed above $3,000 when the fast food chain announced plans for a 50-for-1 stock split in June. The split will be the first for Chipotle, which went public in 2006, from Yahoo Finance. YouTube star Jimmy Donaldson, a.k.a. Mr. Beast, has a $100 million deal to produce shows for Amazon MGM. His first show, Beast Games, is a reality TV game show in which contestants vie for a $5 million cash prize, the largest single prize that's ever been offered on TV or streaming. The Washington Post. Space VIP, a luxury space tourism company, announced plans to host an immersive dining experience in space with Michelin-starred chef Rasmus Munk, costing $495,000 per ticket. The chef will cater his meal aboard a space balloon that soars up to 100,000 feet above sea level. From the New York Post. Middle managers, defined as non-executives or oversee employees, made up almost a third of layoffs last year, up from 20% in 2018. In January, United Parcel Service said it would save more than $1 billion by slashing 12,000 manager jobs, from CNN.com. And finally, from the bottom line column, bad weather in West Africa has sent cocoa futures soaring to $8,018 per metric ton. That's more than three times the price a year ago, and 42% above the previous record set back in July of 1977, from the Wall Street Journal. And finally, from the business segment, investing? No rate cuts at March Fed meeting. The Federal Reserve again held interest rates steady in response to sticky inflation measures, said Jeff Cox and CNBC.com. Investors were bullish that the central bank's rate-cutting campaign would kick off in March, and would continue with six or seven additional interest rate cuts this year. But recent inflation numbers suggest the Fed's fight isn't over, though three cuts this year still appear likely. Chairman Jerome Powell stuck this week to his recent messaging, which has emphasized a patient, data-driven approach with no hurry to cut rates. Next, we'll turn the page to the making money section. Small luxuries, the rising cost of eating out. Date night shouldn't have to break the bank, said Allison Schrager in Bloomberg. All food costs have gone up since the pandemic, but while grocery prices have gotten better lately, the cost of dining out continues to rise, growing by 5% last year. Of course, people can still eat at home, but going out for an occasional meal is important to people's quality of life. It's difficult to do when a burger and a beer for two now costs about $80 after taxes and tip, twice what it was pre-pandemic, even in a city cheaper than New York. This might help explain why people are so miserable despite the broader economy's achievements. It's hard not to feel the pangs of being taken advantage of, said Laura Washington in the Chicago Times. We all shop for groceries, and though the price of a piece of fish or steak, restaurant markups, though, are becoming deplorable. For a third of a pound of grilled salmon, plopped on a bed of quote-unquote fancy arugula or a molehill of pasta, so-called modestly priced establishment I visited recently wanted $30. Then there's the pours. It used to be that an accurate pour consisted of 4 glasses of wine for every bottle. Now, restaurants everywhere are squeezing 5 and charging $16 a glass. Those extra pours still may not be enough to save your local watering hole, said Heather Hedden and Ruth Simon in Wall Street Journal. Payroll costs have surged since the pandemic because restaurants have had to pay more to attract and retain workers. Those costs, which get passed on to diners as higher food prices, are likely to keep rising this year after 22 states in January raised the minimum wage for hourly workers. Restaurant owners are squeezed between escalating payroll costs and diners' dwindling tolerance. Restaurants also underpaid their workers for years, said Corey Mintz in Business Insider. Now owners have to reimagine how they treat their employees, and we as diners have to stop being so entitled by expecting everything to stay the same. On balance, restaurant comeback story has been incredible, said Derek Thompson in The Atlantic. In 2020, the business looked like a goner. 3 years later, employment was back to pre-pandemic levels. Food sales have hit record highs. But the recovery has been uneven. Although chains are thriving, independent sit-down locations are struggling. If more people went out for date night, restaurants might not need to charge as much. As it is, for many, the key to survival has been filling to-go bags rather than filling chairs, as sit-down places have tried to adapt to America's epidemic of loneliness. Also from the Making Money segment, crypto bros feed luxury watch mania. The surge in crypto has yielded another secondary frenzy for luxury watches, said Andrea Felsted in Bloomberg. The prices at which watches change hands in the secondary market has moved broadly in line with the price of Bitcoin over the past 5 years. And with Bitcoin back up at record highs, the Rolex market has seen a resurgence too. The wealthy crypto bros like to treat themselves, and their first choice is likely to be a watch. The 2021 crypto rally also presaged a bubble in secondhand watch prices. But the circumstances may have been unique, as we were still in the midst of the pandemic. With so much time on their hands, enthusiasts became enthralled with watches. IRS free filing software disappoints. The IRS last week rolled out its new free tax filing program, but it can't compete with TurboTax, said Dylan Matthews in Vox. I have just a W-2, a couple of 1099s, still couldn't submit my taxes through DirectFile, the agency's new software. Taxpayers who itemize deductions won't be able to do that in the software, nor will anyone with dividend, capital gains, self-employment, or non-Social Security pension income. Users can only claim the 3 most used tax credits, the Earned Income Tax Credit, the Child Tax Credit, and the Credit for Other Dependents. A direct file pilot is available in 12 states, but even in those, its limitations mean only 1/3 of taxpayers can use it. I prefer another free option, Cash App Taxes, which can handle business income and complex expensing options. And trying the IRS program made me wonder why the government software couldn't be better. Finally, from the Making Money segment, buyers see few mortgage discounts. Few of the strategies home buyers have traditionally used to cut their mortgage rates are working, said Ben Eisen in the Wall Street Journal. One of the most common ways to lower your rate is to pay a bit extra on the mortgage lender at the start, or so-called discount points. These days, though, points no longer move the needle and won't push the rate down much below 7%. So, too, with the adjustable rate mortgages, the initial rate on ARMs has historically been far lower than that for traditional loans, but that's no longer the case. One thing that does work, shopping around and taking the quotes to multiple lenders, since lenders will sometimes lower their rates to win your business. Next, we'll move to the talking points section. Abortion, still a winning issue for Democrats? No sitting president or vice president has ever visited an abortion clinic before Kamala Harris did so last week, said Eugene Robinson in the Washington Post. That fact tells you pretty much everything you need to know about how the overturning of Roe v. Wade by the Donald Trump-stacked Supreme Court has transferred the political landscape. Speaking at a Planned Parenthood clinic in St. Paul, Minnesota, Vice President Harris praised staff there for, quote, providing health care in a safe place, end quote, and decried anti-abortion extremists. It's a long way from the not-so-distant days when Democrats worried about alienating moderates with abortion talk, saying only that the procedure should be safe, legal, and rare. But with Republicans rushing to fill the post-Roe vacuum with draconian restrictions on reproductive rights and voters, even in red states, consistently passing ballot measures to protect abortion access, their Biden-Harris campaign knows it can only benefit by reminding Americans how Trump took away women's freedoms to control their own bodies. It's one thing to talk about reproductive rights, said Ingrid Jacques in USA Today. It's another to pose with abortionists and celebrate the ending of a human life's beginning, turning tragedy into quote-unquote gross campaign fodder. If the Biden administration thinks it can whip independents and moderates into a frenzy on this issue, it hasn't been paying attention, said Caitlin Buss in the Detroit News. The share of voters who rated abortion as their top issue dropped from about 1 in 4 in 2022 to 1 in 8 this month. Voters, men and women, are instead more focused on inflation and the border, areas where Biden gets low marks. The extreme abortion activism he has farmed out to Harris stinks of desperation. Abortion could be an election-deciding issue, said Julie Roden-Zebrach in Washington Monthly, but only if less engaged voters are told exactly what's at stake in November. President Biden avoided saying, quote-unquote, abortion in his recent State of the Union, yet working-class women and others outside the Democratic bubble won't be moved by vague talk of reproductive health or the right to choose. They need to know that the GOP plan for a second Trump term includes a de facto ban on abortion pills, a push to surveil providers and recipients of abortion, and a rollback of Biden administration guidance requiring hospitals to perform life-saving abortions. In 2024, the word abortion, for better or worse, will help Democrats win. Some items from the noted column and talking points. Texas has spent roughly $150 million over the past 2 years to bus more than 100,000 migrants from the state to self-declared sanctuary cities such as Chicago, Washington, D.C., and New York City, despite early promises from Governor Greg Abbott that private donations will cover the cost of busing, more than 99.5% of it has been borne by taxpayers, from CNN.com. School hate crimes against LGBTQ plus students more than doubled from an annual average of 108 from 2015 to 2019 to 232 in 2021 and 2022, according to FBI data. In states that have passed laws of policies curbing LGBTQ plus student rights and education, school hate crimes more than quadrupled over the same period, from the Washington Post. The Environmental Protection Agency this week finalized a ban on the only type of asbestos still used in the U.S., more than three decades after a federal judge blocked the agency's first attempt to rid the nation of the carcinogenic mineral. The new ban applies to chrysotile asbestos, which is used in roofing materials, brake pads, and gaskets. Some 40,000 U.S. deaths annually are linked to asbestos exposure, from the New York Times. Finally, in the noted column, unintentional shootings by children killed at least 157 people last year, wounded 270 more, according to the gun safety group Everytown. About half of the 411 shootings, the highest number since Everytown began tracking such incidents in 2015, involved children who shot themselves. In the other half, someone else was wounded or killed, typically another child. From NBCNews.com. Also from the Talking Points section, non-white voters shifting toward the GOP? With the November elections looming, Democrats face a massive vulnerability, said Russell Contreras at Axios. They're losing black and Hispanic voters. For decades, non-white voters have been one of the most loyal parts of the Democratic coalition, but that's rapidly changing. A recent New York Times poll found that non-white Americans who backed President Biden by a margin of nearly 50 percentage points in 2020 now favor him over Donald Trump by just 12 points, 56% to 44%. Among Hispanic voters, Trump now actually leads, 46 to 40. In Gallup polling, the share of Latinos who consider themselves Democrats dropped from 57% to 47% from 2020 to 2023. It's a foreboding shift for Democrats, who until recently had reason to believe rising numbers of Hispanic voters would give them a solid majority for decades. This shift may mystify progressives consumed with identity politics, said the Washington Examiner in an editorial, but it's not surprising. The Biden economy has benefited white professionals with stock portfolios, but minorities have been battered by the highest food prices in 30 years and skyrocketing rents and mortgages. Many black voters favor tough crime policies, and many Latino citizens competing for jobs want a secure border, not Biden's catch-and-release disaster. Party identities have changed, said John Byrne Murdoch in Financial Times. The GOP has become the home of working-class voters of all races rather than the party of wealthy country club elites. And many blacks and Hispanics are churchgoers with traditional values on gender, sex, and religion. The shift among Latino voters defies a simple explanation, said Jennifer Medina and Ruth Iglielnik in the New York Times. Latinos are a large and diverse group. Differences across regions, generations, and economics all play a role. Trump has gained support among evangelical Latinos and among young, second-generation Latinos inclined to vote like their white peers. Many upwardly mobile Latinos see Trump as a blunt businessman, don't consider themselves the target of his incendiary rhetoric about migrants. Some strategists believe the polls are missing Latino citizens with limited English, and that in the end, Trump will drive Hispanic voters back to Biden. But with Latinos now accounting for 15% of eligible U.S. voters, their votes may be pivotal. And November and beyond, neither party can win with white voters alone. Next, we'll move to the People segment. Why Blanchett Abandoned Religion. Cate Blanchett was 10 years old when she lost her faith, said Jonathan Dean in the Times of the UK. The Australian actress's father had just died of a heart attack, leaving her mother to raise the family alone in a Melbourne suburb, and Blanchett had turned to religion for answers. I wanted God to put a hand on my childish shoulders to say, Your father is with me. He's having fun. You'll see him in 60 years, recalls the two-time Oscar winner. But that didn't happen, so I fled from the church, moved down to the river. I spent my childhood propelled into nature. Had she stayed in the Methodist church, I'd have a lot of bad guitar playing, but instead I rode my bike, thinking I was Nancy Drew. I remember that as profoundly as I remember the hymns. Still, she feels she lost something in leaving the church. Religion contains a sense of hope and a sense of community, and in a way, that desire for something greater than myself never left me. For Blanchette, 54, the theater now offers something close to a religious experience. You're in there with a bunch of strangers in the dark, collectively committed to watch what you're dealt with, then to discuss robustly. It may offend you, you may laugh uproariously. You don't know, but you are going to surrender to what is coming. Elon Musk abruptly canceled a deal to promote Don Lemon's new show on his X social platform last week after the former CNN host dared to grill the billionaire on his political views, drug use, and stance on hate speech. During an interview for the first episode of the Don Lemon show, Musk became annoyed when Lemon asked about the tech mogul's ketamine prescription and his apparent endorsement of an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory on X. "I don't have to answer questions from reporters," Musk said. X pulled support for the show just hours after the filming stopped, a decision Lemon blamed on Musk being, quote, "mad at me," end quote. Anonymous sources then told the New York Post that Lemon had sent an astronomical wish list to Musk during contract negotiations, asking for an $8 million salary, a $5 million upfront payment, and a Tesla Cybertruck. Lemon's agent called the claims absolutely complete, utter nonsense. Rap fans were left baffled and furious after Kanye West took to the stage at the Rolling Loud California Festival last week, but failed to even pick up a microphone during his headline set. Instead, West bounced around in a hockey mask for an hour as pre-recorded music from his new album, Vultures 1, played over the speakers. "It was a scam," one fan wrote on X. "Worst concert I've been to, probably." It's not known how much West was paid by the festival's organizers, who have been criticized for awarding the rapper a headline shot despite his anti-Semitic rants. West had previously said he would not perform live for less than $8 million. Meghan Markle has ambitious plans to become the new Martha Stewart, reports Daily Mail of the UK. The Duchess of Sussex last week debuted a new luxury lifestyle brand, American Riviera Orchid, which sources say will be closely tied to an in-the-works Netflix cookery show, part of a $100 million five-year contract that Markle and her husband, Prince Harry, signed with the streaming giant. And finally, let's wrap up with some wit and wisdom. The willingness to accept responsibility for one's own life is the source from which self-respect springs. Joan Didion, quoted in The Marcellinian. "If you ain't trying to cheat a little, you ain't likely to win much," NASCAR champ Richard Petty quoted in Craig Medrid News. "Life without playing music is inconceivable for me. I live my daydreams in music." Albert Einstein quoted in 7 Days, Vermont. "To say nothing, especially when speaking, is half the art of diplomacy," historian Will Durant quoted in Golf Week. "The thin veneer of civilization rests upon what may well be an illusory faith in our common humanity, but illusory or not, we would do well to cling to it," historian Tony Junt quoted in the Washington Post. "The strength of the pack is the wolf. The strength of the wolf is the pack," Rudyard Kipling, quoted in Indian Transport and Logistics News. And finally, people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. Maya Angelou, quoted in Helena Montana Independent Record. And that's it for this, the March 29th installment of The Week magazine. We thank you for listening. So long until next time.